Welcome to First Things First. Hi, everyone. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's
that
how it started.
Would also have worked baseball-wise and football. So that's great that you played and picked one. That is Nick Wright.
You've thrown Jenna off. You're literally throwing pens at our staff.
You know, our statistician dude tried to get fresh with me before we start the show. I tell him I'm not having it today. Miss me with them comments.
Isn't this what the statistician gave you yesterday?
Oh, yeah, this was my stat sheet. Oh, yeah, thank you.
Blank sheet of paper.
There you go. He's going to get a raise.
Dez Bryant's back in the NFL. Big Ben and Cam square off tonight, but we start the show off with the Kang. Lakers hosting Minnesota. Lost them just over a week ago. Avenged it last night. That guy they signed in the offseason, LeBron James, nearly had a triple-double. 24 points, 10 boards, 9 assists. Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart all had at least 20. Lakers put it all together. They beat Minnesota 114-110. Hey, don't look now, but this team, they've won 3 of 4. Did we all overreact a little bit to the slow start? Here's LeBron on the key to last night's win.
We defended the whole fourth quarter. They made some shots. I mean, if we get any closer on some of those threes, we foul them. And we did one time. We gave up a 4-point play to Jimmy, you know, but we defended. This is the most we've defended in 48 minutes, close to 48 minutes all year. And we did it versus a very good team.
That's great. That's what we talked about, their defense. LeBron thought they played well last night. What do you think was the key, C, to the Lakers' win?
Well, from the beginning, regardless of what the players would say to or admit, you can tell that they took the court with a little more edge, with a little more energy. LeBron initially, and I like to watch these type of things because the players always try to downplay it as far as Luke Walton meeting with Irvin Johnson. But you could tell that at this point, that LeBron was like, I need to get myself more involved. First rebound, they give it to LeBron. LeBron is running the offense. There is no feel it out process. So you could start to see he was being very, very aggressive early in the game. And then they get some great minutes at the end of the quarter by Josh Hart to be able to offset of the great shooting by the Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, they were playing good basketball. So I thought this was, from the beginning, they were far more It was LeBron was, I'm going to get involved in this and get the game going.
You thought the Cavs, it could have been another situation, see, like the Raptors game, where they were down 20 in the first quarter. But against the Raptors. Like the Raptors game, where they were down 20 in the first quarter without LeBron being as involved.
I don't know how long, maybe 4 weeks before the All-Star break, before the Lakers. Like, we know Nick Wright, and we know I know you were up late watching this game. Yeah, that's the transfer, Nick Wright. All right, the brain trust
to
the Lakers.
I thought I was correct.
If LeBron hadn't done that, they could have easily been down at least double digits, 15, 18 points in that first quarter. So I thought him trying to initiate the offense, not deferring to other players, but Josh Hart, those minutes at the end of the first quarter, knocking down some big threes because the Timberwolves came out and played some good basketball early.
I think because it was West Coast, if you're watching right now, you might not have seen the game. You see the Lakers won by 4 points. You see LeBron had near a triple-double. Derrick Rose had a really big game. I don't think people, if you didn't watch the full context of the game, recognize what an impressive win this was for the Lakers. The Timberwolves were 20 of 40 from three. They made 20 threes and shot at least 50% on those threes. In NBA history, going into last night, teams were 34-1 in that situation. And it only happened 35 times in the history of the league. A team hit at least 20 threes, make at least 50% of their attempts from three. They were 34-1. This year, take the percentage out of it. When teams make 20 threes, going into last night's game, 62-7. You lose when your opponent hits that many threes. The Lakers were able to win it. Why? Because LeBron was aggressive in the first quarter. It's a great point. It was the most shot attempts he's had all season in the first quarter. And then at the end of the game, I had said a week ago, I don't trust JaVale McGee late in games.
No.
The Lakers are going to have to figure out either a different rotation or a backup center that's not on the roster. Tyson Chandler gets bought out. His first game with the Lakers, he checks in with 4 minutes left, and an unbelievable sequence from a guy who came into the league a year before LeBron, a guy who's 36 years old. The Lakers have the ball up one, get the ball with 1:06 left. Tyson Chandler gets 3 offensive rebounds.
Yes.
In the next 50 seconds of basketball to make it a foul game, to where all of a sudden the Timberwolves have to foul in order to get the ball back.
You have to be careful realizing you don't necessarily have to grab the offensive rebound, but he's such a smart player. That's one of the reasons why the Lakers want to be able to acquire him and bring him over. He couldn't get to the ball, but he strategically tapped it out a couple times where they were able to secure the rebound in that possession.
That's exactly what it was. He tapped it out once there. There's the third one. In between there, there's one he didn't get credit for where he, with the tap, forced it off a Timberwolves defender so where it was out of bounds Lakers ball. That was enormous. It would have been Timberwolves ball down 1 with a chance to win the game.
And Derrick Rose's last attempt to go ahead when the Lakers are up by 2, they did a dribble exchange where Derrick Rose was getting ready to get an open look at a 3. Tyson Chandler compared to JaVale McGee, who typically stays behind the screen, Tyson Chandler is able to contest that 3 right there. I thought that was a huge exchange right there, them being able to depend. In the first quarter, we talked about when the Timberwolves were red hot. Karl Anthony Towns scored 9 points. Tyson Chandler did play. Those first 3 minutes, a little sluggish. After that, Karl Anthony Towns scores 4 points the rest of the game. So when you're talking about getting a backup center, JaVale McGee cannot play 35 minutes. He's got to play 25, 22. And now you have Tyson Chandler to be able to play 22 to 25. It really helps the Lakers in their interior D.
We talked about what the Lakers needed to do to get back on track. And you said, I can't pinpoint one thing. I can pinpoint a couple. And 3 of the biggest ones you did was their defense, finishing out games, and LeBron looking like LeBron again. It looked like they did all 3 last night.
Well, I'm going to be hesitant on the last point because LeBron still, while he was aggressive early and at the beginning of the fourth quarter when the game was really in play the whole time, neither team ever had a double-digit lead. LeBron was aggressive in the beginning of the fourth quarter. The final 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, he did what he's been doing all year, which is, I am not going to dominate the ball. I am going to run this motion offense we run with the Lakers. And by the way, Ingram stepped up. Then Kuz stepped up on back-to-back possessions, and you saw those guys have big moments for the team. And so LeBron will, and there was late in the game, he had the one possession where he was the only guy to touch the ball, ended with, I think, an 8-foot fadeaway that he made that put him up, I think, 5. But LeBron is still at the end of games letting the young guys figure out what they can do. And by the way, they had a 7-point lead late. All of a sudden, it was a 1-point lead. But for them to win the game, not only when the Timberwolves hit 23s, but when Derrick Rose goes for 31.
Yes.
And Rondo and Lonzo combine to go for 5 points on 2 of 13 shooting, they're not supposed to win that basketball game.
No.
And they did win that basketball
game. Yeah, it's a big win for them. I think that LeBron trying to figure out what they're going to do, especially initially starting the offense, is a big, big help. I just believe the defensive intensity, especially when you got 2 guys, 6'11", 7-footers, able to play that type of defense, it's going to pay huge dividends for the Lakers as they come down the stretch. These are the type of games that you have to win in the Western Conference.
Right. Well, the Lakers have 2 very winnable games coming up, if you can call them that, in Sacramento and Atlanta. If they win those 2 games this weekend, they'll have a positive record for the first time since LeBron got there.
Well, and it's not just these 2 games. And the Kings, oddly, are actually playing very well this year. I imagine they'll come back down to earth. But between now and December 2nd, Jenna, it's a great point. Sacramento, Atlanta, Orlando a couple times. They get the Cavs, the Heat, who are mediocre. They get the Suns. They get the Mavs. Over the next dozen or so games, they are poised to go on a bit of a run. It's one of the reasons why not showing up for that game against Toronto this weekend was such a disappointment. Toronto didn't have Kawhi. They had won back-to-back games, and they no-showed for that game. Yesterday was a huge positive step. To me, this was better than the Nuggets win, even though the Nuggets have only lost once all year. For them to beat this team when they were shooting that well, when they got no production from their point guard play, Tyson Chandler, first game with the team making huge plays, LeBron not having to go 35-12-10 for them to win, this was the best win for the Lakers all year.
All right, let's take a break. Let's talk some football on the other side. Is Dez Bryant about to win the Super Bowl? That's next up, First Things First. Moving on to the big news out of the NFL. It has been 7 months now since the Cowboys released Dez Bryant. Many, if not most, thought he'd be with another team by now, but that didn't happen until yesterday when the Saints, in the middle of a 7-game win streak, decided Dez was the risk worth taking. Dez turned down deals from the Ravens and the Browns, but finally settled on New Orleans, where he links up with arguably the best quarterback he's ever played with in Drew Brees.
Dez has been a really good player in this league for a long time, and there is certainly a skill set that he has that is going to be beneficial, you know. And so I look forward to getting to work with him. I look forward to building a rapport with him. I look forward to getting him involved in this offense and just become a complement to, you know, all the guys that we already have. I think he'll see that too when he gets here, and I'm sure he's been watching from afar as just, you know, how he'll integrate into this offense, and I think he'll be a great addition.
See, we know who Dez was. I don't think anyone really right now knows who Dez is. What are reasonable expectations for Dez Bryant with the Saints?
Well, I think that we should learn something from the other receivers that we've seen go from one team to another. And it can be a number of guys that you want to look at. It could be Demaryius Thomas going from Denver, a system and a team he was with his whole career, going over to the Texans. Immediately, they get him involved. But the fact that, and Nick, you talked about this, the fact that he's been involved in training camp and mini camp, and he's played all the games leading up to it, is a huge advantage. Josh Gordon, we know he missed an extended amount of time before training camp. And then he had a crisis in Cleveland, which led to him being in New England. It took him a few weeks to get up to speed. So now we have Dez Bryant, who's on the other extreme. Jenna Wolf was the only person in April saying, hey, this dude might not be working this year. The rest of us was like, Jenna doesn't know what she's talking about. Jenna knew what she was talking about. So as far as Dez, if I was being fair, I would say I have to slow down the expectations and make them totally different. Amari Cooper, he can't do what Amari Cooper did. Amari Cooper was brought up to speed, and the organization said the week before, he is going to be a starter. So you knew he was going to be on the field. Dez, I think that it's going to be hard for him to make an impact before the Cowboys game. They play the Cowboys November 29th, I think, is the date of that game, right?
Yes.
So on that day, I do believe that's the first time he'll build.
Thursday night football.
Because of the energy, the focus that he'll have in trying to get some redemption.
Well, you think that's the first game he'll play?
I think that's reasonable expectations. When can he make an impact and get in the lineup? It's going to take, because I watched his workout. I watched the videos. Dez is not ready to play in the NFL game. Sean Payton then put a little mandate on him. They signed him to a contract, but we want you to lose about 5 pounds. So I think that Dez Bryant this offseason, I believe he had some type of injury. And I believe that he was trying to rehab that. That's why he wasn't in a rush to be able to get back and play. I believe right now he's still a few weeks from playing regular NFL football, getting his weight back down. I love that demand by Sean Payton and them. I want your weight to be down. And as I told you guys, Curtis Johnson, the wide receiver coach, is one of the best in the business. If I had someone and they had one opportunity, or by God's miracle that I could play another season, the Saints would be the number one choice of team I would go to. And the reason why is because I trust Sean Payton. He's going to call some plays to get me open. I trust Curtis Johnson. He's going to teach me the fundamentals, and he's going to coach me around the clock to get me ready to play in the game. And the third thing, the most important, I believe that Drew Brees is better than this, than Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, throwing people open or getting them the ball when they're covered.
Let's elaborate on that for a moment. You mentioned if you had one more season. I was going to ask you that exact question. If I had hit that Mega Millions, $1.6 billion, I bought a team and said, see, the only way I'm buying the team is if you'll play a game for me. Drew Brees, the best quarterback. I'm not saying he's the best quarterback in the NFL, but for a guy that, with respect at your age, or Dez Bryant at his age, is going to struggle creating separation. That's the knock on Dez, right?
Yes.
Struggling creating separation. You would want to play with Drew Brees more than the other guys. Why?
The reason why, because Drew throws the type of football. Now, all these guys throw a great football, but Drew, he reads your releases better than the other guys. So if there's bump and run on the outside and say, I clear the guy, Drew Brees is going to lead me to the end zone. Now, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are going to do that. But what are they going to do if we're side by side? Drew Brees is the most dependable as far as throwing a back shoulder fade or throwing the ball where the receiver has the best chance.
So you don't have to get open.
You do not have to get open with Drew Brees. And with Dez's vertical leap, look at Michael Thomas. That's who Dez Bryant was when he was younger. physical, contested balls. That's how he made those Pro Bowls. That's how he got that big contract.
So the numbers confirm exactly what you're saying. Drew Brees is completing 70% of his passes to receivers with less than 3 yards of separation. That's the best number in the league by a wide margin. So what your eyes are telling you, the numbers confirm.
Yeah, I had no clue that the numbers, but I'm so glad.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I wouldn't have said it if they didn't.
Okay.
What did you see in that workout? We were talking about this before the show. What were the Saints actually trying to find out in what seemed to me like, even by NFL standards, a pretty arduous workout to figure out who's going to come in, which of these three wide receivers is going to get the golden ticket in the invite?
You could see that they were trying to, and Jenna, you'll understand this, they were trying to get through his first wind, trying to produce some lactic acid, not to create game conditions, but to make him tired. Everyone can work out when they're fresh, but can you, in the game, you're playing with lactic acid, you're playing with some type of restriction. So you could see, when I'm making a guy do cone drills, it's not as if can Dez Bryant do cone drills. No, I'm trying to build up the cardio so that the lactic acid, so I can actually measure where he is from a cardio standpoint.
Even when he does get into game shape, and he does have the bulk of this offense down pat, and he does have some rapport with Drew Brees, isn't he still going to be the third guy behind Michael Thomas and Kamara?
Yeah, we keep asking that same question. We act as if that's going to be a problem. It's not, man, Dez would take fourth, fifth, or anything right now. There is no doubt. Yes. The reason why Dez Bryant is such a good pickup for them is because the Saints have realized this offseason, they went out and tried to and then signed Cameron Meredith, free agent from the Chicago Bears. Now, he injured his knee in 2016. In 2016, he had over 80 catches, over 800 yards receiving. They thought that he was going to be their third guy. He's had a slow recovery from that knee injury when they signed him. He's been active the last six games, but he just hadn't been very productive. So there is a spot on that roster for a third guy. Dez Bryant, when you're to this point and you haven't signed with a team since April, there is no ego. When you're working out with two other guys, when you have Brandon Marshall, guys in the building who they can potentially sign, there is no demand of, hey, man, I'm a number one. Dez Bryant is asleep if he thinks he's a number one or a number two. Dez is trying to resurrect his career. I believe that he shows up at that facility with the right attitude.
All right, so let's go best case, worst case. What's the best case scenario of how this works out for the Saints?
The best case scenario is that he's a contributing player by the time they turn to December. When they get those two times where they got to play Carolina, yep, 2 out of 3 weeks, you want Dez Bryant to be able to play about 30 to 40 snaps in those games. You want to make it tough for Carolina because at some point, and there's no team like Bill Belichick, but at some point, some team's going to put two people on Michael Thomas. And then what you going to do?
So it's very interesting you say that, and I'll get to worst case in a second, but I was talking to Zach Streif yesterday, who played offensive line for the Saints for a dozen years and now works on the broadcast, and he said there were times, for the first time all year, there were times in the Packer game in the Rams game this past weekend, where they were doubling Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara.
Absolutely.
And that they had zero coverage the rest of the way on everybody else. But the problem is, it's Benjamin Watson, who's 100 years old. It's Tre'Quan Smith, who has some talent but has 12 catches and is a rookie. And they didn't see someone that could punish you if you're going to actually, which is very rare, double two guys on the same player, at least attempt to. So that's why he thought this could be a good addition for him. I asked you best case. What's the worst? Is there a worst case? If this doesn't work out, how does it look?
What was the worst case scenario when they signed Adrian Peterson?
They just move on.
It don't work out. Like, they didn't say anything bad about Adrian. They tried to find someone to be able to accommodate him somewhere where he can play. They do things, Mickey Loomis, Sean Payton, in a respectable way that the worst case scenario is he don't work out. He's not as good as they thought he was, or he can't resurrect his career.
Here's a question. Does Dez Bryant make this team better?
If he's 100%, absolutely. Because look at their third and fourth options. There are no guys. Right now, the defense last week, Wade Phillips said, I got zero respect for anybody else you got on the field. Teddy Ginn is on injured reserve. Mm-hmm. If he was on the field, it'd be totally different. They're going to double the running back, double Thomas, and, hey, make Drew Brees and the rest of that offense beat them. Yes, Dez Bryant should be a great addition to the Saints.
Again, you mentioned it, November 29th, circle the date. It's when the Saints and the Cowboys play. Interesting.
Thursday
coming up,
football, America.
Is tonight's Steelers-Panthers matchup a Super Bowl preview? That's next on First Things First. The Le'Veon Bell saga continues. He was spotted in a Pittsburgh gym playing basketball early this week and then sent this cryptic tweet yesterday. And by cryptic, I mean it's upside down. I'm just going to quickly do a little handstand here. With L. Bell tweeting, "I'm not going to apologize for what I believe is right for myself, family, and the rest of my peers, period. Also, if you're really finding the time to figure out what I'm saying, you've proved my point."
So Jenna obviously gave us the shorter version of that. It goes on for two full tweets. It's, if she had read the whole thing, it doesn't illuminate anything.
Well, I mean, guess what? What I did read probably didn't illuminate too much either.
No, that's my point. There's not a lot there. The only thing that's noteworthy is that he really believes he was taking some stand, and he's going to at least claim it's not just for himself, that it's a stand that other guys are going to benefit from. I know, C, you're not big on this.
Well, this is the thing. How can, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a stand for all broadcasters out there, but I don't give a damn about y'all. I'm doing it for other people on other shows. Really? Oh, so I'm getting ready to make a stand. Forget our offensive linemen. Forget our defensive linemen. Oh, other running backs into the future. Come on, Jenna, what? Miss me with that.
Miss me with that.
Come, Nick. Got to come up with a better.
I'm not making the argument. I'm just trying to, just like I often do for you.
You're just translating.
I'm being a translator.
Just translating.
And I am just trying to translate the message I believe.
Is there a class you take for translation? Because maybe you need to take that class again.
Okay.
English to English. Time now for stories to start your morning. All right, Jets fans not happy this morning. Well, let's face it, any morning, really. Sam Darnold was seen at Jets practice yesterday in a walking boot.
Is he going hunting? Goodness gracious, got to get some colors in those uniforms? I mean, Jets, like, listen, spend some money. Put some white in there.
Hold on, go ahead.
The rookie quarterback reportedly...
No, this is funnier than whatever she's going to do. I'm telling you, look at him. He looks like he should be in a Disney.
Why is he in a walking boot, Jenna?
He reportedly has a foot sprain, and he's going to sit out Sunday's game against the Bills. What do you think?
He needs to be in a tree stand shooting Bills and Bulls. All right?
There you go.
All right, listen. I think the Jets actually, this is not a bad
thing.
Is this
foot pain or ego pain?
No. I heard people talking about this. Is this a fake injury? No, I don't believe this is a fake injury.
No, listen. The boot is the most preventative measure to help you take care of lower leg injuries.
But I think that I think it could be good for the Jets because I think McCown right now might give them a better chance to win this week.
All right. To the NBA now. The Lakers topped the T-Wolves last night. LeBron came one assist shy of a triple-double. L.A. has now won 3 of 4. Nick Wright, how close are we to seeing LeBron being full LeBron?
Oh, probably 30 games, 40 games. Like, he's going to take – you saw it in moments last night. See, I know something jumped out to you on that highlight as far as that goes, but
yeah, you don't want to know.
You
don't
want to
know. No, go ahead.
Because your guy read which hand he was going to shoot with and went his left hand and went to block it where the ball was going to go.
Yeah, he's the highest IQ player in the history of the league. Of course he did.
That's what I need to be doing the show with then.
LeBron? I think he's got other things going on. Listen, right now, you're not going to see LeBron fully engaged on defense till the final 15 games of the year in the playoffs, but on offense even, he's letting other guys find their way.
He's got to do that.
And that is the right thing for this team. They're too young, too unproven with an unproven coach
if you have to trade one, then LeBron will be like, hey, I let them see. This is what they can do.
Right. And just real quick on this. I know we're spending a little too much time. 2 years ago, leads the league in minutes. Last year, leads the league in minutes, plays every single game.
Yes.
People need to recognize there's a reason he's in year 16, has never been injured. He knows how to throttle up and throttle down so he can peak at the end of the year as he did last year.
Lakers, we need a half hour earlier start.
10:30 starts.
That's ridiculous.
While we're asking, we need a 4 hour earlier start. The NBA made a lot of people happy last night after much complaining last season. The NBA All-Star Game draft will now be televised in January. So we will know who gets picked first. We will also know who gets picked last. See, this make you happy?
Oh, I'm real happy. NFL, other professional sports, you need to take a snapshot of the NBA. They do some exciting stuff. Basketball, that's why. As far as the market share, more viewers, more popularity than we've seen in recent history, yes, I love it. It meant whoever goes last, good for them. But, hey, I'm an NBA All-Star, so what? I got picked last. Whoever, these little snippy little things these players got, I want to see more of that.
I'm excited for it. What I will say is this. If they do the same format as last year, the captains are the top vote getters from each conference, not the top two vote givers.
Even though they vote, even though you can select
exactly right.
Cross-conference.
And so last year, do you know who the leading vote getter was? It was not LeBron. It was Steph.
Steph, yes.
Steph's playing even better than he did last year. Is it a possibility LeBron's not a captain? And if he's not a captain and Steph has the first pick, doesn't Durant have to be his pick? Like, there could be some nice little intrigue, some drama. I'm excited for this.
I can't believe you think LeBron's going to be the last pick in the draft.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I said.
It's just no one wants to play with him.
Yeah, clearly.
Finally.
Exactly right.
That would be great.
Jimmy Butler, Paul George.
Zion Williamson took the basketball world by storm two nights ago. 28 points in his debut for Duke as the Blue Devils dismantled number two Kentucky. The praise has come fast for Zion. Take a listen to what Warriors head coach Steve Kerr said yesterday.
I saw some kid on Duke last night who was pretty impressive. My goodness, I probably can't say anything more or mention his name because I'll get lots of them. There were lots, but no, the one who's 285. I thought LeBron was. I thought that was a one shot deal, but apparently the next guy's coming. And before I get fined, I'm going to change the subject.
Nick, you had a hard time with Kerr comparing Zion to LeBron.
For a very specific reason. Now, I want to make this clear. Steve Kerr is one of my favorite people in sports. I like everything Steve Kerr represents. And I think right there, he was trying to be as complimentary of Zion as you possibly can. But this is, LeBron is the one guy who, I was thinking about it this morning. There hasn't been anybody that's come along and been like, oh, it's the next LeBron. We had a half dozen guys we heard were going to be the next Jordan. Grant Hill was going to be the next Jordan. Kobe was going to be the next Jordan. There were guys that we saw the prototypes.
And the reason why was because his game and his body type was, you're going to see more like that.
Correct.
Shaq. You don't see a lot of people saying a whole bunch of Shaq, so
Exactly right. Nobody has said this is the next Shaq. Like, with Joel Embiid, they were like, oh, could it be the next Akeem? Part of that was because born overseas. Part of that was the footwork. Mm-hmm. Like, and so
Dwight Howard potentially had to with the body and the way he ran the court early in his career, potentially to be the next. Tried to do the smile, the personality
call
thing.
Call himself Superman.
Tried to way short of Shaq. Yeah.
And so I just, listen, we're going to talk about Zion more than we've talked about any college basketball player, I believe, since Kevin Durant. He is such, more than Anthony Davis, more than we talked about Trae Young last year, he is such a spectacular, singular talent who is just so amazing to watch that we are going to talk about him. And I want to be careful on what we put on this young man's very broad shoulders. LeBron, the moment he came into the league, was one of the five best passers in the league. That's what made him special to go along with the body. And I want to be careful on what people are expecting from Zion Williamson and the a lot of people believe he's not the best player on his own college team. Now, he's the most spectacular player to watch already. We know that. But I feel like it could be unfair to a guy who's 18 years old and figuring everything out.
Well, this is part of it, man. This comes with the talent. Like, there's tremendous benefits. I tell my wife all the time, like, you could jump on the subway. Yeah, you can't complain about people coming up to you snapping pictures when you go to the restaurant. They're going to give you a preferred table. Like, these are certain things that come along with being talented, a public figure. And so I believe that Steve Kerr, he's trying to reach into, as far as sports, and trying to pick out, because LeBron physically
is unlike
and that's what I believe he's trying to identify in Zion. Because in Zion, you can't pick out anyone in the last 40 years to say he looks like this. He's a part Sean Kemp, Charles Barkley, and LeBron had that same type of thing. With Steve Kerr, what I thought was said, man, when God made LeBron, he was only going to make one of them. Right. Just like Mike, he did only make one of them. Zion is different. His body type is bigger than LeBron. LeBron is a freakish athlete, and how he plays basketball and his basketball IQ is at a very, very high level. But Zion is a special. At 6'7", 280 pound, to be able to elevate at a 45-inch vertical, that deserves some recognition. Now, you don't have to compare it to LeBron James.
Who would you compare him to?
I mean, Sean Kemp is the name people are going to say, but there's never been – he is – The reason Kerr said 285 is because that is what we've seen guys that can. Zach LaVine can jump. Aaron Gordon's a big dude who can jump.
To be able to get that body weight that high off the ground, and he has a charisma about him. He's got a showmanship about him, and he's got a gamemanship. He cannot handle the ball like LeBron at this point, but he does see things on the court. He does play at an elite level as far as intellectually, but. LeBron James at 14 years old, a dude named William Wesley said, listen, man, there's a guy in Ohio is going to be the next great basketball player. And I was like, really? They weren't talking about him at that age.
And that, that's the only, I know people hear me say this, they think it's not about LeBron. It's about the kid.
Yeah.
I just think there are, of course, you go to Duke, you're one of the top recruits, you're on national TV, there's going to be expectations, you're going to be talked about. That is part of it. But at some point, the expectations can become too unfair. And that's all that I'm tempering.
I believe that they're fair when you're that type of athlete, when you're LeBron's son. And we put that, you put your highlights on, we put your AAU team on, we talk about where you're going to high school. Now, I believe, and I'm emphatic about this, that's unfair. Who Zion is? Oh, yeah, man, that's the price of admission. If you want the nice table, you got to take them pictures on the subway, too.
All right, America, if you are on the C train today, Chris Carter is taking pictures.
Come on, let's do it.
Line forms on the left.
Yeah, I'm get off at 78th.
Time
for your Subway choice moment. There it is.
Hey, Subway, y'all need to call me because that was not, no one gave me a cue card or anything.
Tonight's Thursday Night Football matchup on Fox. Oh, it's a good one. Don't take my word for it. Cam Newton and the Panthers have won 3 in a row. Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers have won 4 in a row. Both teams playing their best football right now. All right, C, what is the key to this matchup?
Anytime you go on the road, especially in the short week, all right, you have to be careful. I can't give extra possessions. Cam Newton, he's given a lot of respect to Ben Roethlisberger. He looks up to Ben, how big he is, how he plays in the pocket. You can't try to out-duel Ben, even though you have to. So I'm saying
that. Explain that.
I'm saying that you know you have to play a great game. But you can't keep your eye on trying to outduel Ben compared to playing it play by play, taking what the defense gives you, and not going into the game saying, you know something, I'm going to take over the game. It might be. I might have to get rid of it quick. I might have to throw it down the middle. Whatever the game would take compared to keeping my eye on the matchup, which a lot of times you force to play and it forces you into turnover. So Carolina, they've been on a hot streak. If they take care of the football, they can go to Pittsburgh and win this game. Tonight.
Listen, Carolina, you guys know how I feel. They turned their season around. Not the season was going south, but their season was teetering. They're down 17-0 Philly in the fourth quarter after playing a terrible game against Washington. They scored 21 straight against Philly in that fourth quarter, and since then they have been as good as any team in the league. One of the keys to that has been playing clean games, not turning the ball over, and in the two games since then, jumping out all over their opponent early. They jumped out on the Ravens 24-7. They jumped out this weekend on the Bucks 35-7. I mean, that game was over at halftime. And that is who, as even though Cam has not been up and down this year, who he and the Panthers have been this entire time he's been there are front runners. That's how you get to a 15-1 season where I think you started 13 or 14-0, is you start hot and you keep getting hot. It's why the Philly game was so surprising.
Because they started so slow.
They didn't have there weren't a lot of instances in Cam's whole career of being awful, the team being bad through three quarters, and then turning the switch in the fourth quarter. So I think the start of this game is critical for Carolina. This is a game where if I'm going to really get in the weeds on it, if I'm Carolina and I win the toss, I do not defer. I do not go for that, let me try to get the ball right before the half and then score at the beginning of the second half. I know that's even more popular on the road because the crowd is going to be loudest at the start of the game and less loud at the start of the second half. So you'd rather have the ball in that. No. I want to get out early. Mm-hmm. I think the Pittsburgh defense played well the last month, but I still think Carolina can move the ball on them. If I'm Carolina, it's very important to me I'm playing with a lead. And I know that everyone wants to play with a lead, but some teams, the Saints don't have to play with a lead. The Chiefs, the Rams don't have to play with a lead. The Panthers, their offense is peak capacity if they get out to a good start early on.
And we talked yesterday about how good this Panthers defense actually is. Mm-hmm. What does that do to Ben Roethlisberger?
Oh, man, they're going to put a lot of pressure on Ben. Typically, Carolina, they make you one-dimensional. Very, very stout inside from a defensive front to try to make you force the ball. They got some of the best coverage linebackers in the league that you want to see in Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly. They're a special, special football player. So that's what they're going to try to do. If you want to look at something besides the Carolina defense, you want to look at something as far as a key to the game, watch Carolina because they've had more of a Jekyll and Hyde personality as far as being home and being on the road, Jenna. Jenna, you're a person you like consistency. At home, they lead the league as far as rushing attempts. They rush the ball 53% of the time. On the road, they're a totally different team. And what happens is, Nick, they get behind on the road, and then they get away from that physical style and that running attack. So on the road, they only rush the ball 29% of the time. So if you're watching this game and they're not running the football, that's the way that they play on the road. They got to turn that around in Pittsburgh. So at home, they're the best at it. They have the highest percentage. On the road, they are the lowest percentage in the league. So drastic difference.
That discrepancy is jarring. And that also leads to why at home they're 5-0, scoring 32 a game. And on the road, they're 1-2, scoring less than 21 a game. But the other important part of that home-road thing is the five home games versus three road games. That means the second half of the season, not only do they have two against New Orleans, not only do they have this game here against Pittsburgh, they only got three home games left. So in that stacked NFC where they are still very alive for everything, they're alive for the one seed still in the NFC, like, it's going to get tough for them down the stretch. They only got three more home games left. This is a game that I think is actually more important to Carolina than to Pittsburgh, just because I think Pittsburgh is clearly the best team in their division with respect to Cincinnati. Carolina is fighting for that. This would be an enormous win for Carolina if they can get it.
I think if Pittsburgh can get the 6-2-1 without L. Bell, that sends a message not only to the rest of the league, but to him.
To Le'Veon?
Yeah, maybe he'll start tweeting where I can read it. I wasn't even messing around.
Panthers and Steelers, Thursday Night Football on Fox. Coming up, could Dez Bryant disrupt the Saints' chemistry? That's ahead on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. We are joined by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. Coach, good morning. Happy Thursday. Good to have you here in town.
Good to be here.
Coach, I'm warning you, both of them extra spicy today.
Just towards each other.
Good.
Just towards
spicy
each other.
Thursday. I like it.
Did you just blow that off?
No, Jenna, I just don't like you today.
See?
That's like what you said, spicy towards each other.
Yeah.
Talk about the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles. And while the Saints are getting the headlines with Dez Bryant, it's the Eagles who are going to debut their new wide receiver, Golden Tate, when they host the Cowboys on Sunday. Eagles at 4-4 looking to break out of the pack. Head coach Doug Peterson is anxious to see what Carson Wentz and Tate can do. Take a listen to this.
It's going to take a little time. You know, they're going to have to spend a little extra time either during or after, you know, practice and get some extra throws possibly just to kind of get a feel. I think as a quarterback, you'd want to do that. And same way with Golden, you know, Matthew Stafford throws it probably a little differently than Carson does. So getting used to Carson is something he's going to have to do. But we got to do it fast, you know, like now. So it's going to take some time.
We have to do it fast, like now. Also, it's going to take some time. So there you go. Contradiction a little bit. But, Coach, assuming that they do get on the same page, and it is a successful page, how much does Golden Tate change the outlook for this Eagles team?
Oh, I really like this trade. Of all the trades, I thought this trade fit the best because one of the things the Eagles did so well last year was third down. And one of the problems they've had this year is closing out games, and that comes back to their ability to convert on third down. Golden Tate's been one of the league leaders in third down conversions for multiple years. Here's a guy that's had 90 catches for the last 4 years in a row. He's got the right type of attitude, work ethic, toughness. He's got intangibles that I've always appreciated in coaching against him and watching him play. And to be able to insert that into a locker room right now, It's hard to find. It's hard to be able to do that and get someone that can add significant value in an area that you've had drop off in. So I thought it was a great move by the Eagles.
We were talking yesterday off the air about a coach, and I won't mention the coach, but a specific coach you wanted to bring into your staff because you thought he added an edge and you thought it was good for the team to have that edge. I feel like Golden Tate as a player adds a bit of an edge. If you know his story, if you know teammates like him, but he's even by NFL standards, he's a tough guy.
Yes, sir.
And he's a no-nonsense guy. And I'm not saying the Eagles don't have those guys already, But for a team that hasn't seemed to find the identity that they had last year, and I know it's a new year, and I know you have to start over, is that one of, in addition to he's great yards after the catch, he's great on third down, in addition to the X's and O's things he brings, is that another reason this could be a successful move for them?
Yeah, to bring in those intangibles is really important. Now the difficult thing, and Chris can talk about this, when you bring a player to a new team, often they're not the way they were at the old team because they're trying to get used to the locker room. They're trying to fit in. They want to be part of the culture. They don't want to necessarily impose their will
like
on it.
It's like your first date. You know you're not going to get who that person really is. It's who they want you to appear that they are.
Is it different if the player was brought in because he was cut or waived by another team as opposed to your team trading for him, like giving up an asset to bring him in?
Well, it's any social group that you go into. Oftentimes, you're feeling it out. You wanna be part of the group, and you want to contribute in a positive way. You want to see how business is being done. Not everybody can just insert themselves and be an alpha immediately. And then, look, it happens with big money free agents all the time where you pay for a set of intangibles, but you don't really get those until year two because they're trying to see where they belong, where they fit.
This is one of the things. When you're making a transition as a wide receiver and people start making statements like this, the Cowboys, they trade a number one for Amari Cooper. The ownership, everyone, coach, everyone starts to say he's going to make an immediate impact. So he's also, as a wide receiver, he's got a relationship with the quarterback. So the owner, the coach, the quarterback have all signed off on, hey, we need to make this guy look good. In Golden Tate's situation, they trade for him. They need a guy who has that skill set better than Zach Ertz and Alshon as far as running with the ball. So now you've empowered him because of the things that they say. So his learning curve is not as steep. So defensive guys will gravitate to him. Other guys will go to him. You won't have him. If he's in the cafeteria, you will not allow him to sit by himself. You will go over to make sure that he feels a part. Now, if they don't have a press conference for you, if they don't, it's not that important. I got 5 minutes to eat my lunch. His time is not important to me. I'm just going to go ahead and finish. So when you have this higher level pressure from ownership and management, it really helps that transition. I believe Golden Tate makes a quick transition. He's one of my favorite wide receivers. And to answer your question, Nick, when you watch a veteran player, how he goes about doing business, and for a wide receiver, does he block? Is he a diva? Those type of things, you gain sweat equity in that room. So, yes, who Golden State Tate is, how he plays as a player, it does help compared to other wide receivers who we've seen traded for and everything. So, right. Yes, I do believe that transfers over to great things for Philadelphia and that locker room coach.
And what you don't want to happen is what you saw in the Dallas game. And to me, that was a classic example of there's so much pressure to make Amari Cooper work that Dak Prescott goes back and throws an interception into double coverage because he thought that he needed to make that work.
To justify the move, almost.
And
you try to justify the play call, too, because in practice you run that play four times. And you know what the coaches do? Not only did they design that play for Amari, they designed a stupid defense that was going to have Amari be open. So then they forced the quarterback. You know the reason why? Because when they play fake to Zeke, all those dummies on the scout team just rushed up there. And in the game, none of that stuff happened. So Dak froze because the pitcher they gave him was not the one in the game. So he wasn't smart enough to throw it away, realizing the coaches, that was not a good play there.
Yeah, and Golden's a part of the puzzle. And they won the Super Bowl last year. And there's a lot of guys that contributed so much to that success. So now it's his job to come in and fit in and be a part and contribute to this season. And look, they're in position now to make a run in that division, and I think Golden helps that in most significantly on third down and helping them close out some of these games.
The question we always ask is, how long does it take before a receiver who comes in gets up and running, even for a guy like a veteran like Golden Tate? Take me inside what that looks like with Carson Wentz. Does Carson adjust to Tate's route running? Does Tate, you know, respond or adjust to how Carson plays, what he didn't get from Matthew Stafford? Are they just throwing throwing balls to each other? What does that look
like? Well, this is the thing. You're not trying to make him a complete receiver. You're not trying to teach him three or four wide receiver positions. Right now, there's a need as far as in the backfield or in the slot to be able to get the ball out and get yards after the catch. So, to me, he's like a guy like Anquan Boldin. He's like Steve Smith. All these guys, you can bring them up to speed because you can throw the ball sideways and he can still be effective. So, I believe immediately after the bye week, he will play a significant role because they need him on third down. So I believe that Doug Peterson gets him and watch Darren Sproles. If you're talking about a team getting better, Carson Wentz adding those two guys coming down the stretch, I believe is a huge addition to that Philadelphia passing attack.
I'm glad you mentioned Boldin and Steve Smith because he was described to me as a guy who most similar to those players and someone who's a tough player but not disruptive in your locker room. Brings an edge to your locker room but not a disruptive force in your locker room. And so that's what I think Philly got in addition to what Coach was saying, which is if their offense is more reliant on yards after catch than any other offense in football outside of maybe New England and they were lacking it this year, he's as good as any wide receiver in football at that specific thing to go along with the third.
Yeah, I believe the Philly fans are going to love him. I believe they're going to gravitate to him because he's got a showmanship with him as far as his toughness and everything.
And do we see him Sunday or how much do
we
see
him
Sunday?
Oh, man, you got to see him Sunday. Ain't no – at their record?
They didn't buy him not to play him.
No, you know, no. And he wants to play.
All right. Stay with us, Coach. Coming up, could Dez Bryant disrupt the Saints team chemistry? That's next on First Things First. Coach Mangini, Coach, this is for you. We're going viral. The NFL and popular video game Fortnite, your favorite game, your favorite pastime. They've teamed up starting tomorrow. Fortnite players, get this, will be able to purchase and customize NFL jerseys for in-game use. And then apparently dance.
Oh, that's
the
awesome.
Night away with those jerseys on.
Coach, you into this?
Yeah, well, you know, my kids love Fortnite. I don't know if I love the NFL uniforms on it. It is a game where you go around shooting people.
Oh, come on. It's all me. Oh, look at the Photoshop.
There it is.
Look at the Coach Mangini. Look at the Photoshop.
Yeah.
That is great.
Awesome.
What? I don't know what I'm wearing.
What you're wearing?
You're wearing your Jets.
For some reason, you're wearing a tux to a gaming situation. Yeah. Give me an estimate, Coach. Total
amount spent by my kids on this game?
Yes.
My oldest one spends way too much. The other ones are good. I think the game, we had a little bit of a drop-off.
Yeah, lately. But the Mangini household lifetime it's at least into four figures.
No.
Oh,
no.
Man, they're tricky.
If I find out it's into four figures,
it's $6 here,
problems.
$4.
What do you pay in-game things?
In-game things for things that don't even help you in the
game. Like that, you would buy that outfit.
Fortnite.
It doesn't upgrade you at all in the game. It just makes
money.
You look better.
That's the creator of the game.
Got it.
Neither am I, Jenna.
Thank you.
You pay for celebrations and outfits.
I was excellent in that. You can put that in my Emmy tape.
Nice.
Fortnite.
Moving on to big news out of the NFL. All right, Coach. Dez Bryant found himself a job, but it's a good one. It's with the New Orleans Saints, a Saints team riding a 7-game win streak with Super Bowl aspirations and one of the best quarterbacks in the game. I'd take that job, too. Dez has been unemployed since April when the Cowboys released him. There's a reason so few teams have shown interest in the wide receiver. Some would call it team chemistry. Here's Drew Brees on the current state of the state's Saints locker room.
I think this locker room is one of the best locker rooms I've ever been a part of as far as the type of character and type of leadership and that kind of thing. So I think as many, you know, if you talk to free agents and guys that, you know, have come here over the past couple off seasons, I think they would be the first ones to tell you that, you know, that has a lot to do with, I think, the reason why, you know, we are successful and we've been able to build the culture that we have. I think everyone compliments one another. I think we all want to win, you know, and so at the end of the day, if we can bring somebody in here who can help us win, then that's great.
Of course, the flip side to that, Coach, is don't fix what ain't broke. Right now, the Saints ain't broke. But do you have any concern, Coach, with Dez fitting into the Saints locker room?
No. No concern at all. Here's the situation now. I don't think they paid him very much. So if he comes in and he's disruptive, they move on from him. It's a little bit like a mid-season lottery ticket. It's in his best interest to fit in, to find a way to be productive, to put himself in a position this next offseason to go get all the money that he lost over the first eight games by not taking the Baltimore contract. But the only way he does that is if he gets on the field. The only way he gets on the field is if he learns the offense, if he develops some sort of chemistry with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, and that's going to take him being a part of the system. As soon as he steps out of line, they can move on from him. There's no money invested in this. This is the polar opposite of Odell. Polar opposite. He has no leverage, and he has everything on the line. He has everything to lose. And for the Saints, it's if he gives him an upgrade, great.
And it's the polar opposite of what goes on in New York as far as Drew Brees, Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis. They're not having that in New Orleans. Like, they're not having that in their locker room. Like, they've created a culture. It just didn't change 6 months ago, 6 weeks ago. They've been doing this in their locker room in New Orleans for a long time. If you're talking about destinations in the NFL, if you're an offensive player, Sean Payton, New Orleans, perfect conditions, crowd there. I mean, yes, they've been a destination in the last 10 years. So it just happens. They got plenty of players there that had questionable character and everything before they got there. But there's a culture there. When Dez gets there with Michael Thomas, he's going to be shocked how hard Michael Thomas worked. Marshawn Lattimore, I know this, through Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, talking to Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland, who runs their personnel department. They were going to blows this year in training camp because Marshawn Lattimore, also an outstanding, coming off an outstanding rookie year, and Michael Thomas, they were fighting each other in training camp because Michael Thomas was coming to work every day. Lattimore was like, I'm going to work when I want to. And you see the difference. Lattimore got off to a slow start. So they've had some things there that has helped them develop this type of culture. I believe this is the perfect place for Dez Bryant because he's got a young wide receiver in Michael Thomas who is potentially one of the best in the league. 1, 2, or 3 this year, he's going to be up there. And I think it's a great example. If Dez wants to get his career back on the track, how can I play a role to be able to help these guys and whatever their goals are? Because Dez's goals is finish the season with a winner, with a good report, not numbers. What do the Saints say about Dez Bryant? That's going to determine, Jenna, how long the rest of his career. Does he have a tryout somewhere else? Or does he parlay that into, man, the Saints could sign him to a deal after this season.
I understand why the Saints, and to Jenna's question, why Saints fans would be apprehensive about this. It's what I said yesterday, that this is the hottest team in the league. They're coming off their best game of the year. You're now adding an X factor, no pun intended, to the locker room and to the offense that is the second best offense in football. So I understand the trepidation on their side. On Dez's side, if this works out, he gets to be right. Like, Dez, when he got cut by Dallas, said, he did say he wants to play in the NFC East, but wants to play on a contender, play with a great quarterback. I'm taking my time. Turns down an offer from Baltimore. Looks foolish. Turns down an offer, gets an offer from Cleveland. We thought, hey, you got Baker Mayfield. You got Todd Haley. Like, what are you doing? No, he wanted more money. Looks foolish. If he ends up turning those two decisions into teaming up with right now, which is one of the three Super Bowl favorites in the whole league, the best quarterback he's ever played with, and actually making an impact with them, then he gets to, even if he kind of just backed into it, have made the right decisions over the last 6 months. Like, I don't know if
he got real lucky.
You're really making the right decision. The guy's been sitting out for 8 weeks. How much did he lose from the Baltimore deal? What were they offering him per year?
Right. It was $7 million per year.
So he's lost $3.5 million. That's a great decision.
Well,
congratulations.
Hold on. Right. Well, listen, Coach, I understand that's how it appears right now. The point that I'm making is he chose to turn that down, right? He made the decision for some reason, this is not the fit I want. Maybe he wasn't healthy yet. Maybe it was he thought that he was deserved more money. But if this turns into, you're shaking your head, see.
There is no scenario, Nick, where he was right. There is no scenario where Dez Bryant, one of the marquee franchises, and being on the Dallas Cowboys, being all pro, last time we saw Dez was riding out of the Cowboys facility in a Bentley truck. Deuces, NFL report, oh man, there's 4 to 6 teams, man, that want Dez Bryant's services. Oh, no, Dez, this was not no plan A. Oh, A, oh, plan B, oh, plan C. Oh, man, this is off the radar. And man, this could end Dez Bryant's career. Because if you go to a great organization and you screw it up, you play with one of the all-time great quarterbacks, you know who you are next? Remember Ocho Cinco when he went to New England?
Absolutely.
Everyone said, oh, this is going to be a great match. How much football did he play after that?
Agreed. I know that the downside part of it, and maybe I shouldn't have said he could end up being right. Maybe I should have said this could end up working out for him in the regard of he is now, as you have been saying all morning, the best situation for a receiver of his skill set, with the best quarterback he's ever played with, the best coach he's ever played with, and on the best team he's ever been on.
Well, here's my biggest concern is there's so much shifting and motioning and multiple formations, and they do a lot of things weekly, personnel groups, all those things. Can he do it? That's my biggest question mark is can he move around like that? Can he learn the system?
And, Coach, that's where I'm dependent on Curtis Johnson. I believe CJ is one of the best teachers in the NFL. I've had a bunch of my kids play for Curtis Johnson, so I know he is a very coach-friendly coach. I know he
player
will spend...
Player-friendly coach.
Yeah, no, a coach-friendly coach, meaning he teaches in a way that it's friendly, it's teachable.
Okay.
It's coach-friendly to your ears, to your eyes, because... So a lot of times coaches only teach one way. When a coach can teach a lot of different styles, he's more apt to be able to connect with the students. So when I say, man, it's coach friendly, meaning yes, it's pliable, it's adaptable, it's not rigid. Man, Coach Mangini, people thought, man, Coach Mangini, he can teach a lot of different personalities, a lot of different ways. That's how you're able to be successful as a coach.
But to me, that makes it even more important that he be successful, because if you've got a coach with that reputation who can teach to a lot of different styles, and you go in and can't get it, mm-hmm. then around the league, it's like, yeah.
Quickly, though, if he turns out to be a non-factor, is this the last stop for Dez Bryant?
I mean, I think what these guys are saying in that regard is 100% correct. That if in this situation you're not productive, then every other team in the league is going to look around and say, our quarterback's not as good as Drew Brees. We don't have Sean Payton. Like, if he's not productive there in this situation, why would he be productive anywhere else? So to me, the risk is enormous, but the reward is potentially enormous as well. That's the point I was making on the front end. I think the knock on Dez set all the locker room and fiery personality stuff aside. The football knock on Dez was a lack of, it sounds impolite, football acumen, ability to process complex offenses and to run multiple routes. Those were the football knocks on Dez. How much he's able to process a totally new offense and a totally new system that is a complex one, that will determine a lot of his success, I'd imagine.
And a lot of that falls on your guy, Curtis, to get
him. Yeah, oh, no. CJ going to do his job.
All right, Coach, stick around. Coming up, Hugh Jackson is out in Cleveland, but he's got a lot of praise for Baker Mayfield, his former quarterback. Next up, First Things First. The Browns are 2-6-1 this morning. It was back in week 3 they picked up that first win, came against the Jets. We thought it was the start of a new generation for Cleveland. We thought wrong. Since then, one win, one fired head coach, one fired offensive coordinator, and one more chapter in the Browns' unstoried franchise. That fired head coach, Hugh Jackson, was on the herd yesterday talking about Baker Mayfield.
I've watched him impact the people around him. He's able to make people play better than what they can play. I mean, he has an internal fire within him that is unmatched, in my opinion. The guy is built the right way. And if you're going to turn around an organization that has been losing, a guy's got to be able to handle that. You can't just walk in there because all of a sudden you become what that organization is. And I don't think he will ever let the organization, what's gone on there, affect him. I think he will rise above it.
Coach, where are we right now on Baker Mayfield? I think he came out of the gate strong, and he's had a bit of an up-and-down stretch. Where do you fall right now on how Baker's playing?
There are a lot of things that I like about Baker Mayfield. One of the things I like the most is the way that he celebrates with his teammates, the sincerity.
Really?
Yeah, like watching him, it was maybe his first game. I forget who broke a long run, but he's sprinting on the sideline with him. Like, that sincerity, that plays well in the locker room, and you know that it's genuine. And I think guys will rally around that part of it. I like the way that he anticipates on his throws. I think that's been very good. What I don't love at this point is he's got some make something happen in him where he's going to run around, he's going to try to make plays, he's going to force plays that shouldn't be there, he's going to take unnecessary hits, he's going to put himself at risk instead of trying to stay within the framework of the play. And I think he's either going to get injured or you're going to generate too many interceptions because you're trying so hard to create something positive.
How much of that is, in your opinion, who he is, and how much of that is the circumstances and where he is? And by that, I mean, you and I were texting this weekend about Pat Mahomes, not surprisingly. And you were texting,
I was responding.
Okay. Oh, sure. And you said to me along the lines of, you know, what would he look like in Buffalo or in a situation that is not as ideal as Kansas City? And I just, because I think Pat Mahomes has some of that make a play happen in him. But he's playing with a much better offensive line, obviously better skill position players around him in a better scheme. So those plays are turning positive far more often than they're turning negative. Do you think Baker needs to change that basic almost philosophy? Or is that something that as the players get better, as the scheme gets better, as the talent grows, that could actually be an advantageous thing for him?
Well, the thing you forget about Patrick Mahomes, he's had a year. He had a year to sit. He had a year to learn. He sat behind a quarterback that, sure, to me, was an excellent mentor for him. So what he's doing this year is a little bit different. Baker Mayfield's numbers, a lot of them are better than Carson Wentz's numbers his first year, better than Jared Goff's numbers his first year. And it depends on, is he going to be smart enough to not take the hits for a 6-7 yard gain? Is he going to develop in that area in terms of reading coverages? And judging by his personality, his work ethic, it looks like he's got a chance to do that. And now if he constantly feels like the weight of the world is on his shoulders, then you make some bad decisions.
He's got to be able to become very quickly and play more like Drew Brees compared to playing like Russell Wilson. He does not have the physical body that Russell Wilson has to continue to try to run and make plays like Russell has done. He's got to be able to understand his body will not hold up, and sometimes making a play is avoiding a sack, getting rid of the football, compared to avoiding a sack, get rid of the football, making a play down the field. Now, there are some things that he does with the football, how he throws the football, how his footwork in the pocket is outstanding even at a young age. I don't believe that his height will be a challenge because he throws over the top as far as a throwing motion. But I'm just going to hang on to what Hugh said. He makes players who can't play better. Well, how about this? Get me some great damn players, all right? Like Patty Mahomes, all right? So don't make a comparison to young quarterbacks where Cleveland, they have some of the worst skilled position players as far as wide receivers in the league for Baker Mayfield, and he's tried to force to try to make these guys in the NFL guys. Besides Landry, he don't have any proven guys. What about getting him some good talent? Well, they got plenty of room under the salary cap, yep. So that's what I want to see in Cleveland, and before we can do a real evaluation, you got to put some talented players
around. Isn't part of that, Nick, a little bit of, I not only want to go out there and make a play, there's this overwhelming sense of I got to save this organization. Like, I'm that first pick. Like, I'm the one that's going to pull this organization out of the mud.
Which is why I actually think the coach being fired, because I don't think Hugh was going to make it past this year anyway, I actually think the coach being fired can relieve some of that. Like, you asked us the day after Hugh Jackson was fired, what can Baker do the rest of the year? And C and I said simultaneously, not rehearsed, we both just said survive. Like, at this point, mm-hmm. The Browns know this isn't the year. It all comes together. This is another year where they fire their head coach, another year where they're going to have a high draft pick. And maybe that for Baker, he recognizes, hey, this is more than, this isn't a mile race. This is a multi-marathon situation. And what we have seen, by the way, it's not just the first three games he started, see, the numbers were bad, but you saw the throws, you saw the plays. The last three games, you're still seeing those throws, but the numbers are also ticking up. It's 6 touchdowns to 2 picks. It's a 93 mm-hmm. quarterback rating versus a 67 quarterback rating his first three. So he is slowly but surely getting better, not just with the eye test, but on the stat sheet.
Now, the danger that you have when you fire the coach midseason is you've got an interim head coach who's auditioning for the job. You've got an mm-hmm. interim offense coordinator who's auditioning for the job. Their vision isn't long-term. Their vision is, how can I get the most out of this group right now so that I have a chance to either get this job or yes. get another job. So as much as Baker needs to think longer term and the GM and the owner, you've got a group that has very short-term thinking, which could put either could potentially put the quarterback in a difficult spot.
All right, Coach, thanks for hanging today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Got to take a break. Coming up, have LeBron and the Lakers officially turned a corner? Next on First Things First. Ooh. Time now for us to go viral. It's our favorite 7-year-old football prodigy, Blaze the Great, cutting up the D. And if you look close enough, you can see Nick Saban scouting in the background.
Oh, we haven't seen him with his hair down. Oh, go get him. Go get him. You miss.
No, for real. Can you look at this scene and say that that kid's got what it, that kid could be somebody? Or is it too early? He's just a fiery little type.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I mean, you can know he's athletic. How tall he's going to be and everything, we don't know that. You have to look at the parents and everything. Genetically, though, I'll start with that.
Okay.
Oh, you put him on the playground. I can tell you, absolutely, roll the ball out there, throw the ball out there. You can tell which ones is Nick Wright kids and which one is Jenna Wolf kids.
Yes!
Yeah, there ain't no doubt about that. Nick's got one athlete in the family, and that's DeMonze. Nick be trying to take credit for DeMonze. Nick, get off that corner.
Yes,
that's all Danielle.
Got it. Yes,
get off back. Adopted the kid and swept. Hey, that's my Nick's at the game. Kyle's going, hey, that's my boy.
It is my boy.
You see that vertical?
It is my. Now, I might not have given him any blood, but he's my son.
Yeah. DeMonze's out there yelling, I ain't get that from my pappy.
To answer your question, Jenna, I talked to Derwin James last week. Mm-hmm. He said the first time someone told him that they thought he could be an NFL player, he was 6 years old. So, like, around that age, they saw something on the football
right.
field. Now, a lot of things have to happen.
Of course.
But there's
that was also a guy at the corner store saying, bro, can you get me a quarter?
Okay, that's fair. But see, you said first time you ever touched the football in the stadium that's now named after you. You were 8 years old. What happened?
Scored a touchdown.
Right. I mean, I'm not putting this on this kid, but for the guys that end up being great, it usually shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, my coach
early.
Told me, man, run like you're running from the police. I was like, okay.
Stories to start your morning. Another phenom, Zion Williamson, took the basketball world by storm two nights ago. 28 points in his debut for Duke, with Warriors head coach Steve Kerr comparing him to LeBron James. What do you make of the comparison, Nick?
We love comparing college athletes or high school athletes to pros if they're on that track. He's the first one I've ever heard compared to LeBron because LeBron's got such a unique body type. We've heard guys
yes.
compared to Kobe, to Michael.
Mm.
We heard Dwight compared to Shaq,
yes.
you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Embiid compared to Hakeem. Luka compared to Dirk. Like I've never heard someone compared to LeBron until right now.
I don't mind this comparison because he's such a freakish athlete at 6'7". 280, 285 pounds, a 45-inch vertical. At 6'7", with that type of weight, to be able to get that body, that power to be able to get that above the ground, that, to me, deserves type of comparison with people like LeBron.
DeMonze's got 40 inches vertical. Came from me.
Harper's got two. The NBA made a lot of people happy last night after
but
much complaining
smart.
Last season. The NBA All-Star Game draft will now be televised in January. So we will get to know who gets picked first, and we will get to know who gets picked last. See, this make you happy?
Man, NBA, they got this thing right. I like it. Other pro sports, y'all need. Hey, NFL, y'all need. Hey, Troy, I know you watching the show. The NBA, they're having more fun. NFL, Major League Baseball, take notes. I love it.
Oh.
I'm with the pettiness, yeah.
I know now why you're saying the NFL needs to get back to this.
Why?
The last time the NFL did something like this, didn't you get to pick the teams?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Andy Dalton, Mr. Flame and
okay,
oh, I can't
yeah, good,
say.
Good,
no,
good,
no, no, no,
no.
He cost me $20,000, though. Good. He could not complete a 7-yard out throw. NBA, keep doing what you're doing. Hey, Troy, I know you're watching the show. Y'all need to get a grip.
Or at least get Chris's $20,000 so we'll get off Andy Dalton's head. It's been 6 years, man.
Yeah, give me a personal appearance. I'm willing to take it. I'm available in the
And
city.
In with tonight's Thursday night football matchup on Fox. It's a good one. Cam Newton and the Panthers, they've won 3 in a row. Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers have won 4 in a row. Both teams playing great football at this time. All right, Nick, let's stick with Cam. Is he getting enough credit for the season he's having right now?
I don't think so. I understand why. It's one is because he already has won an MVP. In the year he won the MVP, they were 15-1. And so we feel like that he got credit for that year. And Pat Mahomes doing what he's doing. Drew Brees doing what he's doing. Hey, don't look now, but Phillip Rivers is having his best career year. Like, all these good – I haven't even mentioned the, you know, what Jared Goff's doing, and even better in year three. But the reason that I think Cam doesn't get enough credit is because we – all quarterbacks get evaluated by the same scale, touchdown interception ratio, passer rating, passing yards. And Cam adds something to his team that none of those other guys do at this level, and nobody else has done in NFL history at this level, which is the consistent, every single game, you know you're going to have to deal with 6 to 12 carries from the quarterback, at least 4 to 8 designed runs by the quarterback, and they're punishing runs. They're runs that actually can wear down the defense. And so I don't think there are 5 quarterbacks in football that could be doing what Cam's doing for this Panthers team, and I don't think he gets credit on that scale.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, in the history of this great game, 99 years, there's not 10 quarterbacks that have more talent than Cam Newton. So when we talk about giving a guy credit, first you got to realize, well, what are you starting with? All right? You're starting with one of the most talented guys from a structure, physical skill standpoint that we've ever seen in NFL history. So trying to give a guy, it's like Aaron Rodgers. How much credit should we give him? If he's completing 68% of his passes, oh, wow, he's the greatest thrower of the football. So he's not going to get enough credit. When you have a standard that's very high, Tom Brady has done this because how well he played. Peyton Manning had that same standard. So I don't believe that Cam is being given as if we don't talk about him enough. I evaluated him on based on what kind of talent he has, how he's evolved, and him being inconsistent for his first 7 years of his career, that has led me to being right now to, oh, I'm glad they added North Turner. Oh, I'm glad that he's improving. But I don't think this is a season where Cam should be getting more credit. One person should be getting more credit is Ron Rivera, because the atmosphere that he creates there, losing defensive coordinator, losing players, losing coaches, going out and hiring Norv Turner, saying this is the right guy for Cam Newton. I believe that those things are very, very important as far as Cam's development. He has gotten better as a quarterback, orchestrating what quarterbacks should do. But we're 8 games through, and we got a number of guys playing at a level that they should be. We should be talking about them and what they're doing more so than Cam.
Nick, what is Cam doing differently this year that he wasn't doing last year?
He's just eliminating those awful games. And we've talked about this a lot. Chris had that
And not
chart.
Just games, the play, so he comes out and doesn't continue.
Those individual plays, yes.
Absolutely. That's probably a better way to put it. But Chris had that chart he liked so much last year that looked like a bad stock, where it was up, down, up, down, up, down. And it was Cam's week-to-week passer rating. This year, that hasn't been the case. He's had one game all year where he had a really awful passer rating. They actually won that game. But I do think, like, we can look at through 8 games this year and through 8 games of an MVP season, that this year's on the right. He's better across the board. Now, the team's not 8-0, and it should be noted in that MVP season, he was extraordinary in the second half of the year statistically, which brought up his numbers for the year as a whole. But it is about, I think, the 2 points Chris made that I totally agree with. One is Cam is graded on a curve because he is so physically gifted. He is graded on, it's almost hesitate to bring the guy up, but the way Dwight Howard was graded, even in his prime. Even in his prime, Dwight was a little underrated because it felt like, well, he should be doing this. In fact, maybe he should be doing more. And the other thing that's hurting Cam this year is Pat Mahomes on pace for 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards. Drew Brees on pace to complete 80% of his passes.
Yes.
And so, but that doesn't mean we should get lost in what we said a few weeks ago, which is if Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers had led a 17-point fourth-quarter comeback against the Eagles, that would have led the show. Instead, we talked about it briefly the next Monday. Like, there is some of this that gets overlooked. Won't get overlooked tonight because the only game on, it's up against Big Ben.
Yeah, won't get overlooked by Nick Wright. You try to pass over one of his clients. His law firm, Wright & Wright, represents guys that look a lot like Cam Newton.
This guy. Jenna, you can go ahead.
Back to the NBA now. The Lakers hosting Minnesota lost to them just about 9 days ago, avenged it last night. LeBron nearly had a triple-double, 24 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists. Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart all had at least 20 as well. Lakers put it all together, They beat Minnesota 114-110. Don't look now, but this team has now won three of the last four. Did we all overreact to the slow start? Here's LeBron on the key to the win.
We defended the whole fourth quarter. They made some shots. I mean, if we get any closer on some of those threes, we foul them. And we did one time. We gave up a four-point play to Jimmy, you know, but we defended. This is the most we've defended in 48 minutes, close to 48 minutes all year, and we did it versus a very good team.
See, you're one of many very happy that the game started at 10:30 last night, so you're able to watch every minute and you're wide awake this morning. What do you think was the key last night to the Lakers win?
Jenna, the first half, I'm excellent on that. The rest of the second half and everything, I'm relying on Nick because Nick's a fool, stayed up. Hey, Lakers, why West Coast? Everyone else is starting at 10 o'clock, which is 7 o'clock. Why are you starting at 7:30? Like, what's the 30 minutes
because
for?
Because L.A. traffic, man.
And are you certain of this?
Yeah. And because they're the Lakers, those two things. They like.
I think it's more the Lakers
time.
And they're blaming it on the traffic and everything. But okay. It's killing me for that second half, Jen. I was done. I didn't.
Gotcha.
But what I do like is LeBron took the initiative that I'm going to be more aggressive from the beginning. From the tap on the first shot, Timberwolves come down, they shoot it, they miss it, rebound comes. They don't look to Lonzo. They give the ball right to LeBron. LeBron comes down and sets up the offense. So he's very aggressive in those first 8 minutes of the game. I thought that was very important. That lets you know that the team is engaged as far as changing these slow starts that they get off to. And also, I got to go to two bench players. A lot of news around Tyson Chandler signing with the team. He was tremendous. He makes a lot of intangible plays. And I believe LeBron, at this stage of his career, like to have a couple grown men, older guys, on who he can relate to. I believe Tyson Chandler is a big pickup. And, man, Josh Hart is a beast. 21 points off the bench, especially that at the end of that first quarter, because the Timberwolves were on fire. He was able to give them that boost offensively, but I believe he's going to be huge off the bench. So if they're going to get better, that bench and those role players have to play a significant role, and they did last night.
I understand a lot of people watching right now this show probably didn't watch the whole game last night, so they don't know what LeBron's talking about with the great defense. You see, he allowed 110 points. Like, listen, they allowed 67 in the first half. 43 in the second half. They allowed the Timberwolves to make 6 2-point baskets the entire second half. Think about that. 6 2-point field goals the entirety of the second half for Minnesota. It cannot be overstated what an unlikely win this was for the Lakers as far as what the Timberwolves were doing from three. It wasn't just Derrick Rose having his career best night from three-point range. The Timberwolves as a team were 20 of 40 from three. 20 made threes on 50% shooting from three.
If I tell you before the game, Derrick Rose going to make 7, Jimmy Butler going to make 5. There's no other stat you're going to, unless someone else on the team gets hurt, a significant injury, there's no other stat that's going to lead for a victory for the for the Lakers.
And listen, if a team makes 20 threes and shoots that high of a percentage, going into last night's game, in NBA history, they were 34-1. 34-1. For the Lakers to win this game was remarkable in that regard. When teams get that hot from three, you flatly lose. So why did they win this game? Josh Hart was key. Brandon Ingram, I thought, played his best game of the season.
Yeah.
Kuz made at the end of the first and second quarter. Final play of the quarter. LeBron's bringing the ball up. Looks like he's going to take that left wing three he likes so much.
Yep.
Finds Kuz trailing top of the key three to end the first quarter. Exact same play to end the second quarter. And then to add some to it, in the third quarter, LeBron acted like he was going to do that. Hit it to Rondo. Rondo hit Josh Hart. The Lakers got 3-pointers to end the first, second, and third quarter. And then at the end of the game, I said last week, you got to figure out something for JaVale McGee because he cannot be playing at the end of these games. Derrick Rose caught fire, and all of a sudden it's a one-point game with a minute three left. And what happened? The Lakers got 3 consecutive offensive rebounds thanks to Tyson Chandler taps. He taps it out past midcourt, extra possession. Taps it off of Karl Anthony Towns, extra possession. Taps it out again, extra possession. So even though the Lakers went 0-for-3 with a chance to turn a 1-point lead into a 3- or 4-point lead, they end up getting the ball with 12 seconds left, you've got to foul him because Tyson Chandler's energy and Tyson Chandler's aggressiveness, that saved the game, or else it would have been a Derrick Rose game again.
Yeah, Karl-Anthony Towns gets off to a great start in that first quarter. Tyson Chandler, him and JaVale McGee hold him to 4 points the rest of the game. That and those tap outs, a huge storyline to the Lakers winning.
I know we kind of laughed about it, but now that they learned how to finish out a game, now that they learned how to play defense, how do you know when this team has turned the corner?
I don't think it'll be like a car. You know what I mean? Like, I think it'll be a slow curve, and there'll be almost like stops and fits to it.
When will you say, I like the way they played last night? This is them. This is the team I think that.
Oh, well, once I know what the actual team is. Because I don't think Tyson Chandler they got for free. There's a buyout. Yes. They add him. They got to figure out the point guard spot now. Like, we know LeBron will ratchet it into full gear. LeBron played 104 out of 104 games last year, played 42 minutes a game in the postseason, was peaking at the end of the year. He knows how to control his body to where he's peaking at the end of the season. That's why he seems to kind of be in second gear right now. But for the Lakers to win last night when Rose goes for 31 and Lonzo and Rondo go 2 for 13 combined with 5 points, they need one of them to assert themselves, and they need to figure out what the future is for the other one. So, 30, 40 games is the answer to that. But over the next dozen games, a lot of bad teams they're getting ready to play. They could go on a nice little stretch.
Yeah, I think this run is going to help out, especially those young players. But this roster, Nick and I don't believe this roster is set, so we believe that we'll continue. We still need more time because
right.
We believe they're going to make a couple of changes.
CC's favorite guy, Kentavious Caldwell Pope, also not really helping out.
No. KFC. He needs
KFC.
To get it together.
KFC.
It's okay.
When he starts playing good, I'll get his name right.
No, you won't.
It'll be like Peter Berger.
Coming up, okay. The gap between – he likes fried food. The gap between Bama and the rest of college football might be more narrow than you think. Next on First Things First. Dwayne Haskins and number 10 Ohio State look to keep their playoff hopes alive in a showdown with Michigan State Saturday, 11:30 Eastern. Then number 19 Texas goes toe-to-toe with Texas Tech, 7:30. College football kicks off Saturday on Fox or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
My friend Coach Izzo, I got to tell you, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to your wife. I got to apologize. But Coach Izzo, I'm coming to your town and punch you in your face this weekend. Let's go, Buckeyes.
They better get it done.
They ain't punching nobody.
No,
man.
I know they're not.
Are we? I think the Buckeyes are like Texas Tech, man. We're a finesse university.
They're too soft. We got to bring in some toughness there.
Look who's here. Danny Canal.
What's up? How
what's
we doing?
Up, good Danny?
To see you, man.
Great
Danny,
to
what's
see
going
you.
On, bro?
How we doing? Good? We're doing all right.
Danny's got takes.
But CeCe's got
takes. I know. He's dying to get something in.
So hold on.
The hair looks good, huh, CeCe?
Man, bro.
It looks good.
The latest college football rankings were released on Tuesday.
I need to scan your eyes to make sure that's you.
In a surprise to literally nobody, including my 3-year-old, Alabama was number one. Tua and the Tide dismantled LSU on Saturday night. Safe to assume no one can compete with Bama? Well, not if you're Danny Canal. Danny, you fired off this tweet. I'm going to say it every week until everyone realizes it's true. Clemson is just as strong as Alabama. All right, Danny, you took a lot of heat for this. What makes
shocking.
You think this?
I know, right? Shocking. Canelo
I don't even think it was
on
that,
Twitter.
I don't think it was a scorching hot take either. I think it was common sense. And I get what happens. I get it's Bama. I get it's Nick Saban. They've had this incredible dynasty. And Bama is great. This isn't about knocking Bama. This is about giving Clemson credit for what they've been doing this season. I look at their defense. I think their defense is better than Alabama's. And I think their offense is just as good, specifically since they made one change at quarterback to Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence, since he's taken over, got knocked out of the Syracuse game, which should be a concern because he did get hurt in that game. And they should have lost that game, to be honest with you. They had their backup. That was the week Kelly Bryant lost. But since then, they scored 63, 49, 59, and 77 points this last weekend. This offense is as good as it gets. I wouldn't say their offense is as good as Bama's just yet, but I think if you look at the entirety of the teams, they're right there. And if you said, I think Vegas has them about an 8-point favorite, Bama would be. So clearly, Bama is slightly better than them. But do you know what the spread was when Deshaun Watson beat him in the national championship game? It was
seven
a touchdown. A yeah, yeah, right around seven mm-hmm. and a half, eight. So I don't think it's crazy to say that Clemson is right there with Bama.
Danny, I don't believe all your analysis is based on this year. You broke down the team this year, the quarterback, the controversy there, the defense, how good they are compared to Alabama. But I think, and this is without talking to you, I think some of this has to do with Dabo Swinney, how you've seen this program put together, the type of speed that they have, and they have faced Bama.
Yes.
And when you face Bama, it's totally different than someone like Michigan going to face Bama, Notre Dame facing Bama, or even Ohio State, because it's been some years since they defeated Alabama. Is that correct?
Yes, for sure. And I think there's also some of the fact they have three first-rounders on this defensive front, and they could have gone pro last year. And I don't know if you remember the narrative, CeCe. I bet you do, and I bet you do too. I bet you guys do too. Last year, Bama wanted revenge, and they had this
yes.
mindset of we're going to get revenge. Cleveland Farrell, Christian Wilkins, these first rounders, they could have gone. They came back, and they've had Bama circled on their schedule saying, we want to finish something with something special. They came back on a purpose, on a mission. And that's one thing that I think is being completely slept on. And if you're Dabo and you're Clemson, you're saying, go ahead, everybody talk about Bama, talk about it. And they'll try to get that number, that fourth matchup in 4 years, which I think college football desperately needs to finish this season because it's been a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, Bama's dominance has been such
yes.
a part of the story. But I would love to see. I think it'd be great for college
Listen,
football.
Listen, I hope you're correct. I began the year talking about how Clemson has potentially three top 10 picks
yes.
on their defensive line. And I don't know if it'll play out like that, but I thought they were overwhelming in that area. I thought Kelly Bryant was going to remain their quarterback. I didn't see the quarterback change coming. But it looks like they've gotten better in that spot. But they have played them the last 3 years. But they've never played them where they've got a court where Clemson is at the quarterback disadvantage. Every year they've played them, Clemson's been at the quarterback huge advantage. The first years with Deshaun Watson, even last year with Kelly Bryant, which is why Chris calls this Alabama team the best Alabama team of his lifetime. Like, how do you square that circle where Alabama's defense might not be the number one defense in the country as it has been in the past, but it's clearly top eight, top
yeah.
10, and they have, in my eyes, the best offense in college football because of Tua and the Jerry kid. Like, they have weapons to go along with Tua. The running back who had 60 touches before the LSU game, and then they fed him, and he was getting 8 yards per touch. Like, to me, this Alabama offense is unlike one I've ever seen from this team, from this school.
Totally agree. It's one reason. It's Tua, because he's had weapons all over the place. He's had Julio Jones. He's had
yes.
Derrick Henry. But he's never had a difference maker at quarterback. He's always had a game manager. And that is a huge difference. And that's why everybody's terrified about Bama. And that's why they're getting so much love this season, which is deserved. I think there is a formula to beat Alabama. I don't think you try to slow that down. I don't think you can. I think you have to be able to score with them. So the formula that has worked, that's given you a chance, is obviously you have to have the talent, the same sort of NFL-type talent on your roster. I think you have to go up-tempo to neutralize some of the substitutions and keep that defense on their heels. You have to have a mobile quarterback who can run around when things break down. That, again, neutralizes the secondary. It keeps that, you know, it's harder for them to cover guys. And by the way, that mobile quarterback better be an elite passer, which if you go back and look, it's Cam Newton, it's Johnny Manziel, mm-hmm. it's Deshaun Watson, and oh, Swag Kelly was in there too. But he
yeah.
was also like, he was incredible that game. Bam also turned it over five times in that game when he beat them. But there is a formula that gives you a chance. It doesn't guarantee it. And Clemson has that formula. So does Ohio State, by the way. But as you're talking about, I don't know if they just don't have that mental edge, and they have a bigger problem in getting to the playoff this season.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on Ohio State.
No, I wouldn't either.
I don't think physically they're tough enough, and I believe they got some other things going on behind the scene that would prevent them from being in that elite category. The one thing that I like, and I do believe this is Alabama's best team that I've ever seen, but the how this can be derailed is there's nothing like college football. When we get to the playoffs and we have that 30 days where we tell this team in college football, you're getting ready to get crushed by Alabama. And we have seen some of our greatest bowl games or where we don't have a chance, where you have a touchdown favorite. And that's the one hope I'm holding out for in college.
Yeah.
These young kids respond to the fact of, I might get embarrassed. Georgia did it last year. We have seen it year after year. So, yes, it's not like the NFL. It's not like the NBA. And you have a one game game. In that one, you can get upset. And these kids are told week after 3 or 4 weeks, man, you are not good. You're going to get embarrassed. We have seen tremendous upsets happen.
Everyone remembers, I mean, what I believe to be the greatest college football game of my lifetime, USC Texas. Mm-hmm. In the month leading up to that, your guys' former network was running that USC team versus the greatest teams in college football history. Like, mm-hmm. it was a coordination because it was going to be their third straight national championship, kind of, because one of them was split.
Right.
And everyone had just already well, obviously, they'll beat Texas. So I get that part of it. The only thing I can say is we don't know how Alabama's going to play in a close game.
Right.
Because, but that's because they played in a close game. Because right. they've beaten everyone by at least 29.
Right.
Like, they're demolishing people.
As much as we crush other teams' schedules, and UCF is one that always gets mocked their schedules.
This year they haven't had a tough one.
Exactly, and that's where I do think, and even LSU, which was a good win, it was in Baton Rouge, it was night. Baton Rouge's offense, Joe Burrow, has 6 touchdown passes on the season. There are 120 teams with more touchdown passes than LSU has. Like, it was a good shutout, and I'm not taking away from Bamba. You are right. They have not been tested.
Yeah.
To your point about having the month off, that typically does favor Nick Saban. So that's not good news for everybody else. But when I look at the groups that can even compete with Alabama, it's a really small group. Like Michigan, as great a season as they're having, and their defense is awesome, I don't think they have that formula. They're going to try to. It's going to fit right into their wheelhouse.
Down there.
Watch out for Oklahoma or West Virginia. I think
Oklahoma's the quarterback you're talking.
Exactly. They got the quarterback. They go up tempo.
Alabama scored 120 on Oklahoma.
But Oklahoma might score 121. They can score on anybody. I'm telling you.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.